Heroes Broadside. Thank you, Phil Free and Just Kidding, or is it just Phil Free? I'm not sure. Perhaps we can get the word on that one. You're tuned to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, 96.3 FM, and this is the long Sunday morning show. We're going to be rolling through lots of tape on the Right to Sleep Summit, which happened last weekend, actually. Yeah, it was last weekend. Only 4 days ago, wow. When folks from Portland, Seattle, Isla Vista, lots of places, Sacramento, all got together. And not only did they make merry, but they seemed to make sense, too, which is perhaps even more important. Before we do that, however, we're going to play a bit of an interview from Chance Martin of the Coalition on Homelessness, who was not at the summit, but who edits the Street Sheet up there, not Street Spirit, the newspaper you'll more frequently see in Santa Cruz, but Street Sheet. The Coalition has been fighting for civil rights for homeless people up there in San Francisco for quite a while, and I caught him last week. He's got some things to say.
All right, well, it's 11:30 on April 25th, 2002. We're talking with Chance Martin of the Coalition on Homelessness Street Sheet. Hi there, Chance.
Hi.
And you don't sound like your recording machine, but that's another story.
I was under the influence of helium when I recorded that, so.
I always thought you were a lightweight, you know.
So, I get lightheaded from now and then.
Now, you are working with the Coalition on a number of projects up there. This is kind of a calling you for an update on what's happening around San Francisco that you think might be of interest to homeless folks down here or people concerned about civil rights for homeless folks?
Well, there's a lot of things. Our big fight right now is all this legislation that Gavin Newsom is proposing. Evidently, he wants to get a lot of press coverage by flogging these issues, so he's got, I believe, 18 and counting pieces of legislation that are going to be considered before the board. And basically, I mean, my take on all the legislation I've seen it proposed so far is that it's just a rehashing of every anti-homeless legislation that's been proposed here in the last 10 years.
Give us an example of what he's proposing.
You know, exhumed from the grave and dusted off and minor wording changes and maybe more discreet targets for this kind of legislative abuse, but it's the same old story.
So what kind of stuff are we talking about, Chance?
Well, the biggest one is that he wants to take right now the GA payment ranges between 350 and 380 for single adults in the county assisted adult program. And he wants to take all but $50 of the cash benefit, supposedly to create more housing. Only problem is in a housing market like San Francisco, which I believe is still the most expensive in the world, we're not talking about housing. But the only thing they're talking about at this point is doubling shelter capacity. So basically what it would boil down to is charging somebody $300 monthly to stay in a shelter bed.
So I know that this issue came up at a sort of a mini summit that I guess other supervisors that were not sympathetic to Supervisor Newsom's program. You guys held this about a month ago. Did anything come out of that summit that you think would either A, counter these proposals, and B, set people forward? Because you're actually kind of fighting a holding action here, right?
Yeah, well, basically, the legislation has to clear the Health and Human Services Committee here in San Francisco before it goes to the full board for consideration. And the Health and Human Services Committee is chaired by Supervisor Chris Daley, who's a very strong ally of ours. And we feel that we will probably be able to defeat it fairly easily at that committee. But Newsom's already promised to, if it's defeated, to have it placed on the November ballot for the voters to consider, which is very similar to, I don't know if you remember, we had a local ballot Proposition E, here in San Francisco back in 2000. And when we did the initial research to find out what the projected vote was going to be, we were about 20 points behind in the polls at defeating it, and we mounted a grassroots campaign and beat it by 17%.
Wow.
So, I mean, and it was purely a public education effort. I mean, you know, the way they were characterizing this stuff as a homeless panacea, you know, when we showed people the figures and the dollars and cents, they realized that what it would do, and certainly what Newsom's proposed legislation now would do, is dramatically increase homelessness in San Francisco, especially in light of the fact that we're facing a 10% across the board cuts in most homeless services that we have now.
Now, you've heard about, and I guess the Coalition About Homelessness is planning to come down to the Right to Sleep Summit in Santa Cruz?
Yes, that is correct.
And this is a summit, of course, concerned with the criminalization of the homeless around the most basic issue of the right to sleep. And that's something that I guess you had hoped 6 years ago when Brown came into office 7 years ago, along with Hallinan as district attorney, Mayor Brown and DA Hallinan, to kind of decriminalize sleeping. If you were to give us a progress report on how things have gone in San Francisco, how would you do that?
When Mayor Brown was elected, you know, obviously he organized a pretty strong constituency within the Democratic base here in San Francisco to defeat an incumbent Democratic mayor. Problem is as soon as he was elected mayor, he started, not immediately, but about a year after he got in office, when the pressure from the business interests really started to come down to bear, He started backpedaling and basically reneging on every campaign promise he made. Now, the mayor's press office is actively involved in misinformation and disinformation campaigns through a local media. And unfortunately, it's really difficult for us when a reporter's on the phone and they have a press release with the seal of the mayor of the city and county of San Francisco on it. It's very difficult for us to persuade them that seal is being used to cover some of the biggest lies in the public forum right now. So we got our work cut out for us. As far as progress goes, Alan Ann's been kind of backing off too, as far as being a liberal stalwart.
I know Chance said originally he dismissed a great number of not sleeping tickets, but other so-called quality of life matrix tickets that came out under Jordan, the previous mayor and the chief of police. But after that one kind of important action, I haven't seen much else happening. Have I been missing something?
No, you haven't. And actually, I mean, well, it's really strange because it's kind of hit and miss. A couple years ago, the city attorney got some money from the mayor. I think it was $250,000 to prosecute quality of life offenses, and it was a real pork barrel project. It basically amounted to two attorneys from city attorney staff sitting around in traffic court all day, only dealing with quality of life offenses when they came in the door. That didn't really work out so well because the city attorney certainly isn't accustomed to prosecuting cases. The next budget cycle after the project began, the district attorney saw that the funding was weak for the project, and his office took it over. The district attorney's office hasn't been aggressively prosecuting these cases, but they've certainly been prosecuting them.
So hasn't it also been true that the coalition has been trying and successfully getting a number of these cases dismissed, as well as taking some others to small claims court and getting recompense for lost property?
Well, yeah, when people have their property illegally confiscated, we've had some pretty good success at getting some kind of compensation for the victims in small claims court. What was the other part of that? You asked two questions.
That originally you were able, as I understand it, to take tickets to court and get them dismissed.
The main reason that we're so successful in court, and this is this is actually a big secret in San Francisco. We'll tell it to anybody who listens, and I can show you the figures on it, but the main cause for quality of life tickets being dismissed here in San Francisco is that the cops either misapply the statutes or they're making totally fictitious charges. And when it goes to court, you know, the judge looks at the face of the case and throws it out.
Does this mean you have actual liberal judges that have a sort of a true judicial independence? I know that when Keith McHenry was fighting to the right to serve free food and to be free from police abuse, he got rather roundly trounced by the judicial.
No. I don't mischaracterize it as a liberal bent on the part of the judges. It's just covering their own asses because they're not going to waste their court's time with with some of these bogus charges that the cops come up with.
Is there more, is a person more likely to be ticketed with sleeping, let's say, in a park or in a public place in San Francisco now than in 1996 or 97?
A person is much more likely to be arrested for sleeping in a park here in San Francisco. The, you know, as much hue and cry as we raised about the numbers of tickets that, that were being written for homeless people under Frank Jordan's Matrix program, the number of quality of life offenses that, that people have been cited for in San Francisco has actually increased over the maximum number that that happened under Jordan on a yearly basis.
Now, what about the propaganda we've heard probably from Newsom and others that the Giuliani approach in New York City has been so successful in eliminating the homeless from the scene by putting... Actually, before you answer that, just as a background to your last question, how has shelter space changed between 1996-97 and now in San Francisco? Dropped, increased, and in terms of the homeless population?
Why are you asking me two completely different questions at once, Robert?
I'm trying to confuse you, actually, and I think I've succeeded.
I don't think I can juggle that much in my head and be on deadline, too.
Okay.
What was the... Giuliani. Well, I don't know. I generally tend to get my information about what's actually happening in New York from the New York Times. And if anybody's been reading the New York Times lately, they will know that the New York Times has been reporting that homelessness has been increasing in every borough of New York. And that Giuliani's whole approach was basically a shell game. There are every homeless person trying to access services in the city in New York has to go through a centralized intake, which is part of what they want to implement here in San Francisco. That's part of Newsom's schemes. And basically, the way they handle that is none of the centralized intakes and very few of the homeless services are located in Manhattan, which is where 99% of the tourists are. Okay, so this has led to a perception that there's no homeless people, at least in the borough of Manhattan.
But that's a false perception.
But it's a false perception.
Or at least, is it true that, in essence, people have been driven out of Manhattan into the boroughs, or that they're simply hiding more effectively in Manhattan?
They're out in the boroughs, yeah.
The other part of the question I asked you was, you talked about how sleeping tickets have increased in San Francisco. Has the homeless population increased? Has the shelter population increased in terms of the shelter space available?
Well, God, see, when you get down into numbers, yes, they've actually added shelter beds. But the number of shelter beds that they've added are only a couple hundred, and certainly not very effective in the face of the scope of the problem. The other problem on numbers that we're dealing with is prior to George Smith's tenure as the mayor's homeless coordinator, the city and county of San Francisco was reporting to the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual hunger and homelessness report. And that report bases the estimated number of homeless people in each of those urban areas as a function of documenting unmet need. In other words, they actually document the people that can't get into services and count those with the number of people that are actually receiving services.
Right.
So it comes up with a truer number. What the mayor has directed George Smith to do is to go out and conduct periodic snapshot type counts, where he marshals a bunch of volunteers together to go out in teams of two and three, and they roam around the city for 24 hours and count people in the neighborhoods based purely on the function of how they look. They don't actually engage with any of the people. They don't, for instance, if a person's standing there with a shopping cart, they don't ask the person if they're homeless. So basically, they're making this judgment based on the way you're dressed, you know, whether you have a backpack with you or not, whether you're pushing a shopping cart. And we find that methodology to be extremely flawed. And so, even at the best count that they did one count, they found over 5,000 homeless people. But on closer examination, we found out they weren't counting, for instance, homeless people in the hospital, homeless people in substance abuse or mental health treatment, residential treatment, or homeless people in jails. Okay, so they went out and did another count and counted those people too, and they managed to count 2,000 more homeless people. So now the official San Francisco count of homeless people is about, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,500.
But the actual number?
The actual number is probably twice that. On the last application for federal homeless assistance that we obtained through Public Records Act requests, the city and county of San Francisco estimates for 14,818 homeless men, women, and children on any given night, and that's signed to under penalty of perjury by the mayor. But when they're talking to the media, and again, this goes back to what I alluded to before about the active disinformation campaign being conducted through the mayor's press office, when they talk to the media now, the number is the number from this little snapshot count that George Smith and his cronies conduct.
What's the situation for self-guided, self-run homeless encampments? We know that there have been a couple that have surfaced up and down the coast, like Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz, you know, Portland, Oregon's Dignity Village. Does San Francisco have any kind of equivalent? How's it going for people, you know, trying to engage in communal encampments where they protect each other?
Actually, I haven't seen anything like that here in San Francisco since the mayor's first term. The problem is that the amount of selective police enforcement of quality of life laws directed at homeless people that might be in the parks or open spaces has increased substantially. And people, you know, most people do not want to be hassled by the police behind their homeless status, and so they either become very secluded and find very inaccessible and covert camping locations, or they travel on somewhere else, which is basically the intent of this kind of legislation and these kind of laws, is to, you know, create an incentive for homeless people to not stay around town.
Organizations like, I guess, here in Santa Cruz we call it Homes on Wheels, and Santa Barbara has a similar name, and you had a Recreational Vehicles Dwellers Association.
Vehicularly Housed Residents Association.
I know you were trying to work out a deal with the Brown administration to set up an area.
Yeah, we had actually located a site for it. We had some architects work pro bono on on actually creating blueprints for the, I mean, it wasn't going to be that much building, but there was going to be like a wash house slash bath house, and there would be like pavement and specific parking spots for the people to be in. The whole thing would have cost, I think it was about $115,000 to actually create, and applied for federal McKinney funds to pull it off, and every time it's gone up before the local committee that prioritizes projects for federal funding, it hasn't gotten very high rankings.
How many people would it serve?
Gosh, you know what? You're going into a level of detail that I don't have. I wasn't actually directly involved.
Does the organization still exist? I mean, folks are still sleeping in their vehicles, of course, right?
Yeah, there are certainly homeless people who identify as being a part of that, but as far as any movement, you know, there hasn't been any substantial amount of movement to making that a reality since the last funding cycle.
In Santa Barbara, Glenn Maurer, public defender, former public defender, actually head of the defender's office, has successfully appealed cases and won a necessity defense, which has actually sort of set back the Santa Barbara police force on its heels, and it seems to be persuading the city to look into vehicularly housed kind of alternatives for legal places to park and so forth, although they haven't really finalized that. In San Francisco, has the necessity defense been used successfully at all, or is it being considered by you legal eagles in the coalition?
Well, since I am a newspaper editor and not a legal eagle,
and that was Chance Martin from the Coalition on Homelessness. In San Francisco, speaking last week by telephone about what's cooking up there, we ran out of tape, but it's, I think, a good piece of the interview there. And it's, as I said, Coalition on Homelessness. Is a long time civil rights group for homeless people, which has been regularly, every month, publishes a report on what's happening, and it spends a significant amount of time doing protests, demonstrations, and organizing. Good information. I'm not always in agreement with everything the Coalition on Homelessness does, nor do they agree with everything I do, but it's important that we work certainly parallel, if not in terms of united efforts on different occasions. Again, Chance Martin, editor of the Street Sheet. And if people want to put articles into the Street Sheet, you can either contact them directly up there at 415-346-3740, or you can leave a message with Huff, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, our local Santa Cruz civil rights organization, and that's 423-4833. So, lots of stuff happening, some rather grim stuff. I got a message this morning from a man who gave me a grim story about his friend being beaten while Metro Police watched and did nothing, and Santa Cruz Police refused to respond to a call. This is just the story I heard. I wasn't present. I haven't contacted the Metro myself. But in about 10 or 15 minutes, we're going to be talking with at least a man who is friends with a man who was beaten and will give us his story secondhand. And then later in this show, which goes on till 1:30, we're hoping to hear from the man directly, as well as his attempt today to again get the Metro authorities to do something else other than tell him to leave Metro property, which apparently, by the report of his friend, is what was said. I've also got some interviews on the street last night. There was a stabbing last night on the streets, and we're going to hear some interviews about that, as well as there have been beatings in the last week or two. Larry Templeton referred to this in interviews at the Right to Sleep Summit that I had with him. We're going to have interviews about that, too. If you have heard of any violence against homeless people, please call in 427-3772. If you feel awkward or unsafe doing this publicly on the air, leave a message on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Really important to get this stuff together and to start responding to this in a way that protects people. If we need immediate encampments, then that's what we need to do. There's a nice grassy area near City Hall, and maybe that's where we should go. If the police won't protect homeless people, if the Metro authorities, security guards won't do that, then people, obviously homeless people have to protect themselves. In fact, we were going to talk to two homeless people who do defend themselves, and actually were attacked as recently as a few days ago near the Elm Street Mission. So a lot of this is happening, more so than I thought going on, and it's not good. We got to get together and, frankly, put a stop to it. And the way to put a stop to it, I have not got all the answers. Certainly one of the answers is information, self-defense techniques, education, finding out where all this is coming from. And if our police are not responding and the local security are colluding with this kind of violence against poor people, then we need to confront them on it. And that is what we need to do. 427-3772 is the phone number here at Free Radio. You're tuned to 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobs Pierre Robert Norse, Civil Rights on the Streets. We do the show twice a week. Go to 1:30 today, 6 to 8 on Thursdays in the evening. And we are streaming at www.microwave.net/FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. change. Just kidding. Skidmark Bob. A mournful lament with a bit of an angry undertone. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And we were going to have two guests on the air today. One was a woman who announced to me yesterday by phone that she was again being harassed by police for surviving in her vehicle, her only affordable housing, with her boyfriend and her dogs. That was Kathy of Kathy and Danny. And we're going to try to reach her by phone and get actually sort of an update on how that went. That's one thing. A second guest who didn't make it is a man named Michael Boyd, who was actually at City Council talking about police abuse. He actually took a case to the Citizens Police Review Board around the Beach Flats area, and we're going to hopefully get on in touch with him, probably not by phone, but perhaps in person later. I'm trying to reach Kathy by phone now, just on the off chance we can get through, and we'll see what happens with that. We're having difficulty at the moment, so got no guarantees here, but she was concerned about this yesterday, and she was accessible yesterday. And apparently it's the old story of she had her van towed, she was arrested and taken to jail, and her dogs were impounded several weeks ago. But it looks like we're not getting through at this point. Maybe she'll call in. Hopefully she will. She knows that the show is on. She's a rather shy person, and so she may not want to go this public, but she has said she does. So we'll see if we can coax her into the studio. We're going to be talking later about the City Council agenda on Tuesday. There's a big City Council meeting, as usual, the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month. There are two main sessions, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m., with a redevelopment agency session at 5 or whenever the 3 p.m. session closes, which is convenient for the mayor if he wants to cut off speakers he doesn't like, because he can start it immediately before 5 o'clock. But there's no time certain when it starts. You actually have to come sometime around 4 or 4:30 and wait for the meeting to start. It's another example of the Brown Act violations that are going on around City Council, at least violating the spirit, if not the letter of the Brown Act, the law that forces local government to be responsive to the public so that they can't hold closed meetings, that they have to allow people to say their say, that they have to allow an open process. This is something that our so-called progressive City Council is doing a lot of short cutting and cutting corners on, and hopefully we're going to find a way around that, around their cutting corners, actually simply a way to beat that back. And one of the things I'm doing is I filed in federal court for a lawsuit for damages for false arrest when I was arrested on March 12th at City Council for disrupting a meeting by holding up my hand briefly in a Nazi salute in response to Mayor Crone's arbitrarily and rather repressively cutting off a speaker and violating his own rules. And it wasn't a motion that disrupted any meeting. He may not have liked what he saw, but it was a clear First Amendment expression. And his attempt to exclude me from the meeting for doing that is just the latest in a long line of behaviors by the current City Council under the last three mayors, who we had thought actually would be the better three mayors after the Rotkin Kennedy era. And I'm not saying they wouldn't be worse, they probably would be, but if you're not getting any better, you have to do what you have to do to change this whole process. And we do have a little more time before these declarations are due in. I'm going to be reading later what you can do out there to help this lawsuit go forward in federal court. The first time the City Council has been sued in federal court for violating civil rights of poor and homeless people and just members of the public generally, in terms of a whole series of abuses around process, which means, you know, they start early, they close early, they cut you off, they interrupt you, they don't let you speak, they threaten you if you try to respond to a personal attack made by a member of the City Council attacking you by name. If you try to bring in there's a whole, I'm going to read through this later, and I'm just giving you a few instances now. There's stuff going on up in Portland, Oregon, where the city government is trying to, having had its own camping law thrown out by a local judge, they want to have some way of cracking down on homeless people, and they are putting in a revised Title 14, which is one of their titles for, I guess it's the main public safety title involving the kind of stupid, petty shit that they do in Santa Cruz for sitting on the sidewalk, sitting on a planter, leaning on a wall, the stuff that the police like to use to go after people selectively that they don't want in the area. You thought you were an individual member of the public in public space, think again, you're part of Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe's dining room, and you better behave yourself and have your money ready, or else you ain't got no right to be there. That at least is a situation in front of New Leaf Market. And they're actually, I'm hearing rumors that Alibaba is selling and moving on. I don't know if that's true. If anybody has any information either way, I'd like to hear about that. My latest take on all this has been printed in the Good Times, in case you want to check it out. There's a letter there this week. It took me, I don't know, 2.5 weeks to get it in. The Good Times has a very early deadline. So while the Good Times comes out on Thursday, you have to have any letters in by Thursday noon, the day it comes out, if you want to appear in their next Thursday's issue. I think the Metro Good Times is 5 o'clock on Friday, so it's not much better. But that's the story if you want to appear in our alternative weeklies that are actually, of course, just ad copy for the businesses downtown and some of them, you know, the entertainment folks. It's too bad. There were writers for the Metro and for the Good Times that I had some real hope in, and I'm sort of sorry to see that that doesn't seem to be panning out. That's too bad. 7th anniversary of Free Radio happened a few weeks ago, and there was a party, apparently, a few days ago, which I missed. I was thinking of actually playing a little Free Radio 7th anniversary in the studio blather, which most folks heard live, but we actually had some interviews that I did in the studio with old hands at Free Radio, and I may be doing that today. I'm going to be teasing you because I'm not entirely sure what I'm up to. I know that the main crisis on my mind is this beating situation. I'm going to be trying to be covering that. And I do encourage you to call in at 427-3772. That's our call-in number. If you have any information or comments on this, I will also be reading the latest chapter in the lawsuit. I'll be reading How You Can Help, as I mentioned, in getting the city council to start respecting the rights of the public again, and then maybe we can get some items on the agenda which actually restore rights to the homeless generally, such as the right to sleep at night. But also, there's another chapter to this whole thing, the lawsuit that I filed. The city council, in response to our 8-page lawsuit, filed a 197-page response, which shows that they've learned absolutely nothing and are trying to teach us to learn absolutely nothing with them. But we responded with we countered what's called their motion to dismiss. There's no dismissing it. They're going to lose this case. Now, whether we'll get an injunction is not entirely clear, but they're going to lose this case in a federal court. Whether it's through a settlement or a trial, I don't know, but they're going to lose. You can't arrest someone for raising their arm silently. That crosses the line. And it shows you the extent of the arrogance of this council. That's the problem. And how essentially unchecked and uncontrollable. Mayor Crone, the man that you all love so much, or some folks seem to feel is just the sweetest thing this side of molasses, expressed no remorse and no inclination of changing his process. Although, of course, when other people gave him the Nazi salute at the next meeting, he did nothing, indicating that he has a differential policy. If he doesn't like you, he'll have you arrested for your Nazi salute. If he likes you, it's okay, no problem. And the idea, of course, is it seems to me to be not just a First Amendment protected behavior, but if somebody is acting in a repressive fashion, the quickest way to express that is to raise your arm in that fashion in a public context, if that's what's happening again and again. And it doesn't mean you're saying that they're hauling people off to the concentration camps. Although there are some who would say that the way homeless people are treated in communities across this country, including Santa Cruz, and the Santa Cruz City Council is responsible for how the Santa Cruz police treat the homeless population here, is reminiscent of how repressed peoples were treated in Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and other places. They are beaten up, like happened apparently to homeless people last night. They are jailed without cause, like happens to homeless people like Kathy who's taken to jail for simply living in her vehicle and having a ticket for sleeping. Yeah, it's a situation where people who are poor face the kinds of criminal penalties that the rest of us shudder about. I mean, if you're really poor and you're on the streets, you walk that edge all the time. And the only way, I think, to blunt that edge is to get a bunch of people together. And I've said this time and time again, and that was the purpose of the summit, the Right to Sleep Summit. And indeed, I guess there's some health activists who are organizing to this summer for a sleeping campaign this summer to end the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. If you're interested in that one, you should show up in the next Huff meeting, which is at 1107 Ocean Street, down on Ocean, a couple blocks from the freeway, at Baker's Square Restaurant. That's every 8:30 at Wednesday morning, Baker's Square. Or if you can't come, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and tell folks that you're interested. Well, I'm going to try to get in touch with the man who gave me the report this morning about violence at the Metro. Let's see if we can find him.
And we're dialing in here. I don't seem to have a... Here we go again. Tone here.
Hello.
Hey there, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz calling in.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. We're on the air if you're up for it. Who are we talking to?
Ginga.
Ginga.